So my name is, I'm Walter, and I'm in the physics department, and my specialty is nanofluidics. So what are nanofluidics? Basically, it's small plumbing on a chip. So we're talking about little channels that are in the scales of, say, 100 nanometers to tens of nanometers. And why do we care about, and these channels are made using the same kind of technological approaches that you use to make your computer chips, basically. But instead of making transistors and memory elements, I actually make little channels and I fill them with fluid. So why do we care about this? Well, one reason is that you can do a lot of interesting new physics arises as you approach sort of nanoscales. For example, if I have, say, a DNA molecule, which you can think of sort of a polymer, and if it's in free solution like a test tube, it's sort of a random coil. If I take that polymer and I push it into a slit kind of structure, a very thin structure, so thin that it's basically actually smaller than the coil size of the molecule, the polymer will kind of become a pancake. It'll stretch out. And I put that polymer or DNA molecule in a nanochannel, it'll actually stretch out along the nanochannel. This is kind of cool that we can actually sculpt, you know, polymers, molecules, based on making sort of confining structures. And why does this happen? Well, one reason, there are sort of two physical reasons why we might expect sort of DNA to be altered by confinement. One reason is that DNA is a bit like a telephone cord. It basically has a certain bending stiffness, so it takes a certain energy to actually create a bend in DNA. And it also has its charge, it's negatively charged, so you get sort of repulsive interactions along the DNA. So pieces of parts of DNA that are very far apart will backbend, and they can't pass through each other. This is called self-exclusion. And so you get this sort of bending stiffness, and self-exclusion actually allows us to kind of sculpt these molecules based on the design of the structure, which I think is a kind of a cool thing, actually. And what's really neat about it is I don't need to apply any forces or any flow or anything once the molecules are inside these structures. The confinement alone is enough to actually alter their conformation. And so why do we care about this? Well, one application is that by stretching out a DNA molecule, I create a one-to-one correspondence between position within the genome, the DNA sequence, and measured length along the actual nanochannel structure. And we can use different sort of approaches to map the sequence when the molecules are stretched out. One approach is to actually use sort of fluorescent probes that can tag specific sequences. Another approach is a little weird as I developed, is basically you can actually melt DNA. Melting means you go from a double-stranded to a single-stranded molecule, and you can actually create sort of single-stranded bubbles, I showed them in blue in that kind of slide along the molecule, that actually have a sort of a map of the actual underlying sequence. I'm actually going to show you some data in this talk. That's actually a sort of schematic. We should have a laser pointer here in the top, which shows you, you can sort of see these little circular, those are reservoirs, and you see an array of little stripes between the channels. Those are in the nanochannel array. And then I have an SCM. This is actually what the channels look like. And then that little bright line up there is actually an extended molecule, one of the channels. Let's see, does this play? It should play. Okay, it actually does. So you see, this is actually a movie of fluorescently labeled molecules stretched out in the nanochannels. And you see these bright lines are kind of wiggling around. That's actually thermal fluctuations of the extended DNA. And these pictures down here are actually a result of melting the molecule. The take-home message is that these basically look like barcodes, right? You see these series of bright and dark stripes along these sort of extended structures, and these things actually represent sequence variations along the molecule that we can actually use to get information about the DNA. The last slide is that you can do more than just stretch out DNA. You can actually, for example, create a device that has sort of a series of pit structures. This is a slit, and these are little pits sort of fabricated in the slit. And you make these structures, the polymer will actually tend to self-assemble in these slits, and you'll sort of fill out these sort of deeper regions because there's actually more volume here, actually. There's more entropy, we would say, and the molecule likes to go in these little holes. And it turns out that if you can... It's sort of like a Tetris with DNA, I call it. You see this movie, you see each one of those represents an individual DNA molecule which is filling multiple pit structures. And you can see there are fluctuations in the number of pits which occupy. So you sort of get this weird kind of Tetris-like conformation. And then this 1 micron, this is actually, I'm varying the spacing between the pits. You see, you decrease the number of pits which are filled. And it's pretty cool physics here, actually. But it's more than that. I'm actually working right now at the Genome Center at McGill to take this kind of pit technology and use it to actually improve one of the major sequencing platforms available. For example, you can if the pits are large enough, you can trap a single molecule in the pit. And you can actually use these arrays to increase the actually density of the molecules within the field of view and actually ensure that you only have one DNA molecule per pit. You might imagine performing a sequencing reaction individually in, say, each one of these pits across the field of view. So it's the polymer physics that helps us develop new technological approaches for genomics platforms.